You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
1 year ago, the president of Argentina was pushing then-central bank chief Martín Redrado to resign. President Fernández wanted to use a portion of the central bank's $48 billion reserves to pay down government debt, and Mr. Redrado refused because he believed it was ill-advised to meddle with monetary policy for political gain. In his new book, No Reserve, The Limit of Absolute Power, he explains why it's essential that economic policy remain independent of politics. It's published by Amazon Crossing, and I'm very pleased that it brings Martín Redrado to our show today. Hello.
It's a great pleasure to be here.
Just this past October, President Fernández's husband, ex-president Néstor Kirchner, died. Wasn't he expected to run for president again after her term ended?
Yes, he really said, and he was committed to run at the end of 2011, sort of creating a dynasty in Argentina. And some of the signs of that authoritarianism were seen in early 2010 when they decided to step over the reserves and of the central bank.
Well, he had brought you into the administration in the first place, hadn't he, in 2003?
Yes, but as you are aware, we have to go through Congress. So the president nominates, as you do here in the U.S., but then you have to go to Senate confirmation. And therefore, my point there and, one of the things that when he brought me in, clearly I was not a political appointee, but he looked for a person with a professional career that could bring credibility to the job, and that I was voted unanimously by the Senate to become governor of the central bank.
Argentina was recovering from a serious economic crisis at the time. Did you and President Kirchner agree on economic policies in general?
Well, actually, when I look at economic policy, I look at what a central bank should do. And clearly, there were many instances where I disagreed with the rest of economic policy. And I said that either in public speeches or in the reports of the central bank. But clearly, what I try to do is to have a mandate on having sounder banks, building buffers to allow that the country didn't fall again into crisis. And I think that the proof of our good policies were after the Lehman Brothers collapse, where many countries fall apart and our financial system, our monetary system, didn't fall through as it happened with many other countries.
In fact, the economy is growing at a healthy rate, 3% in the past to more recently almost 10%.
Mm-hmm.
That's post the 2001 meltdown. Of course, that 10% is a bit deceptive because it was so low.
Exactly.
Recovery always makes it look like there's something incredible happening.
Exactly. But the mix, unfortunately, is high growth and high inflation. Because after taking over the central bank, the government is using the printing presses of the central bank to finance, as you said before, their expenditure, and that creates the double of inflation in the last 12 months.
And that was another point of contention between you and President Fernández. Should we assume that her husband had some input into what she was doing and into these things that were causing the two of you to disagree?
Well, readers in the book will find very interesting conversations that I had with both of them. And when you go through the book, you could see that there was a clear influence in Mr. Kirchner on his wife in terms of at least on economic policy making. There was a clear at least consultation process that went on, and clearly his views were very much taken into consideration.
Well, her approval ratings had sunk until her husband died. They were at about 20%, but a more recent poll has her with a 60% approval rating. So was it simply the fact that her husband died that she gained so much popular support?
Well, clearly you have to look at this as a human tragedy. You know, a person that is dead at 60 years old and a family is broken. So anybody that from a human point of view, you have to only feel sympathy for the family and for the widow. And therefore, that has been the general sentiment. As time passes by, though, clearly that effect goes down or wanes down, and you're looking more at the administration and the qualities of the policies, and in particular, inflation is hitting the poor, and therefore I think that although the polls are not highly reliable, I don't think that that will be her rating at this point.
Well, her most serious rival, Mauricio Macri, the mayor of Buenos Aires and the leader of the conservative Propuesta Republicana party, just registered 11% support in a recent poll. So maybe he isn't seen as a viable alternative.
Well, I think that what you're seeing is still that the opposition doesn't have the formal candidates. And polls at this point are too early to tell. Many of the pollsters, unfortunately, have huge contracts with the government. So look with care to the data. And I see you're looking at the picture. Why don't you look at the movie? And I don't think that the movie is good in terms of inflation and the insecurity problems that you have in Buenos Aires, so that the living standards of Argentinians, unfortunately, are not improving.
Is there a viable left as there is in Brazil?
Not yet. We have there is a good and interesting a person that has been a filmmaker, and that his name is Pino Solanas. He has done well in the city of Buenos Aires, but still there is no Lula or Dilma Rousseff, really, as you say, a viable alternative. But I'm sure that you will have two or three alternatives that will compete. And in my view, if you don't reach 40% of the vote in the first round, there will be a second round. And there's no doubt that the winds are there out for change, that people want a more a comprehensive, a more tolerant government, and also much more integrated with the rest of the world. This has been a greatly isolationist government.
My guest is Martin Redrado, whose book, No Reserve, The Limit of Absolute Power, is being published by Amazon Crossing. You mentioned inflation. The government reports 11% inflation, which is very high by most country standards, but the actual inflation rate has been put at 33%.
Mm-hmm.
Do most people in Argentina know that the inflation numbers reported are much lower than the real figure?
Yeah, people laugh actually at the reported numbers. We actually mentioned that in our reports on the central bank when I was governor. Clearly, it is more impressive now, the difference, because you have a central bank that has policies to inflate the economy by basically financing public expenditure. So therefore, when people, as you know, we are ending our summer vacation, we live upside down in terms of the seasons with the people in New York, so we are ending our summer, people are going back to school, people are coming out, and they will see, and I will see that in March, we will have increased social tensions because we have salary bargaining, and that will mean that people will try to fight for the purchasing power of their salary.
And you're suggesting that inflation might actually approach 40% by the end of the year.
Well, all the wheels of the economy are there to continue to inflate because the government believes that by inflating the economy, it gets more votes. I think it will realize that it's otherwise, that it's hurting the poorest people in Argentina that cannot reach the level of food products that they need to feed a family.
And there's been a website set up in this country called Inflación Verdadera, which tracks the actual price of 150 products in two supermarkets in Buenos Aires.
Mm-hmm.
And they're coming up with much higher inflation rates.
Yeah. Well, that shows what really happens in Argentina. When you have a pro-inflationary policy, you can hide with some numbers, but reality hits you very hard every day.
And you're writing that the government is perilously pumping money into Argentina's economy. Isn't that a policy that sometimes works? Something similar has been proposed in this country.
Well, but actually in this country you are pumping money into the private sector and you have the benefit that the dollar is the reserve currency or one of the reserve currencies. I think you are losing ground vis-a-vis other currencies, but still people in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia or in Pretoria in South Africa or in Brasilia still want to have a portion of their savings in dollars. So still there is demand out there for dollars. This is not the same case with the peso. So therefore, if you are printing more money than what people want, clearly what you have is a depreciation, less value of that currency, and therefore less purchasing power.
What was the monetary target during your administration?
Well, we gradually took the stimulus, and it was the last year in 2009, it was 14% growth of the money in the economy. and now it's growing at the level of 35%. So by grabbing reserves, it has more than doubled monetary printing. And that's why you may know that now the central bank is asking Brazil to use their printing presses, because our printing presses are not enough to print the money that the government is asking for.
Well, pouring more money into the economy is supposed to stimulate the economy and to give people jobs. What is the unemployment level in Argentina
right now? The unemployment level is a little tricky. It's around 8%. But
well, that's not bad compared to this country.
Yeah, but you have a lot of people in the informal economy, that is to say registered, unregistered workers. Around 40% of the workers are unregistered. And when you look at my main worry is young people. Young people from 18 to 24 years old, a quarter of the population don't get a job. So really there you have a problem. My view is that you need better training. You need to put tax incentives in companies to hire new and young workers. And therefore, by looking at the aggregate, is not an accurate picture of what is going on.
Well, is Argentina's a diverse economy? Brazil has really diversified a lot. Is Argentina doing something similar? Well, I would have thought that because Argentina has such a strong European influence, it would actually be more like a European country than other South American countries.
Well, yes, in the sense that we did have a strong middle class. I am the product of public school and public university, and my father too, and the grandson of an immigrant that saw that social mobility was clearly as you have here in the United States. Now, unfortunately, the level of education has deteriorated. There hasn't been an economic program to diversify. We are blessed with good prices of raw materials, and therefore what Argentina produces has good prices, that there is an inflow of capital. But clearly, we are not achieving the potential, and that is why we don't have, you know, the level of poverty is still very high. Around a quarter of the population is below the poverty line. So you don't have the social inclusion that you need in order to provide better opportunities for all the population.
How dependent on the agricultural sector is the Argentine economy?
Very much so. I would say
soya, the biggest export?
Soybean and soybean oil is, as you say, well, the biggest export. Then clearly corn, wheat, and
beef, I'd assume.
Well, beef, there's been a lot of restrictions on beef. So unfortunately, you know, Brazil is a stronger, and maybe not in quality, but in terms of quantity, has surpassed Argentina long ago. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of restrictions in terms of and the discretionary policies. But there are some areas where Argentina has grown regardless of the government. For example, the wine industry, as you can have in New York, very good red wines. There are Malbec, for example, is well known here. And the IT revolution, in particular in young people, the production of Spanish-speaking content for software and for internet. We have well-educated young people. Tourism is another area where Argentina is growing, but it's not through really a good government approach. It's just by the nature of the own competitiveness of the industries in Argentina.
Hasn't President Fernandez tangled with powerful agricultural interests?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is she wrong or is she right?
No, she's really wrong because agribusiness, I wouldn't say agriculture, but really producing food products, not producing just raw materials, but adding value to the products of the soil should be the natural partner of any government in Argentina.
My guest is Martin Redrado, who is the former president of the Central Bank of Argentina, now he quit, and we'll talk more about that after we take a little break. His book is called No Reserve, The Limit of Absolute Power, and it is published by Amazon Crossing. Stay with us. We're back with Martin Redrado. His book, No Reserve, The Limit of Absolute Power. Now, that's kind of saying a lot. The limit of absolute power. Are you saying that there's absolute power in a country like Argentina, where you have an elected Congress and a president?
No, but the fact that they wanted to take over the central bank, what you mentioned at the beginning, that the Kirchners wanted to succeed each other, showed some trait of authoritarianism that in my book you say, well, you need to put a limit. Fortunately, we have free press, Congress, but they want Congress to be a rubber stamp. So one thing is what they want, and putting limits is what really happens.
Well, is this something, a legacy of the past, the first, you had the Perones with a husband and then a wife who actually became president,
mm-hmm.
not Evita, but his later wife. And then you had military dictatorship for a while. So mm-hmm. is Argentina like a lot of other countries that go between trying to establish democratic institutions but not being able to do it particularly well and then falling back on something a bit more authoritarian?
Well, actually, we are very proud that we have more than 30 years of democracy, or 25 actually, after Mr. Alfonsín took over in 1984. And there has been a history of working institutions, at least democratic institutions. So I think there is no way back. The fact that a president tries to, buy over media, to bring friends in order to produce the news that they want to produce.
You mean like Berlusconi?
Exactly. And, Italy is a democracy. So clearly there is the attempt to become authoritarian, but really, fortunately, the health and the vibration of the Argentine society will not let that happen.
Authoritarianism aside, how much is the struggle over how the Argentine economy must develop similar to what we're seeing in other emerging countries?
Well, not having a comprehensive economic program, not having also tolerance, clearly not having a pro-investment economic program as Brazil or Peru or even Colombia or Chile has, clearly is fostering domestic consumption but not the expansion of production. And therefore, you are hitting some bottlenecks. So therefore, what you can say is that Argentina is not reaching its potential, and that means that you have 10 million people that are below the poverty line out of 40 million inhabitants, which is a real tragedy for a country blessed with natural resources.
Hasn't Argentina raised some high trade barriers over the years? Has that hurt its economy?
Well, yes, you mentioned in the 50s, Argentina and also Brazil had this theory of infant industry, that is, to protect the industries as they are developing. Brazil switched at the right time, but Argentina continues to have high barriers to industrialization. So we didn't really make the switch. So we continue to be infant and really not to move into the developed phase in order to bring better value and better products to our population and to the external markets.
Last year, when President Fernandez approached you to transfer $6.5 billion of reserves to a planned new government fund to repay debt, why did you refuse? Isn't it good to pay down debt?
It is very good to repay down debt. The problem is, with what money do you do it? First, it has to go through Congress, because as we said before, Congress has the authority to print money, and it delegates that via the Constitution to the central bank. So first I said, let's discuss it in Congress. I don't have the revealed truth, but let's go through the institution. Second, it is inflationary because, as we said before, using reserves means printing more money than what people desires, and therefore the inflation rate has doubled. That discussion didn't happen. And as you are aware, no country in the world uses reserves to pay down debt. So we haven't found the magic trick. It's really we have done a shortcut, or we have taken a drug for a while to sort of have a good time.
But it's always a difficult struggle to pay down debt, as we are seeing right now in this country, where some members of Congress seem to be obsessed with debt reduction, and various governors are even proposing all sorts of draconian methods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What you need to do it is over time. You have the capacity because you have the world currency to really have time to adapt. When you look beyond 2015, the cost of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, it is very substantial. And, you know, any responsible politician in this country should look for specific targets that will call to normality. You don't have to do it in a draconian way, but you have to put targets a long time so people see that you're serious about it.
But since so much of this has to do with international finance, isn't it a problem when some countries like China play by different rules?
Yes, but unfortunately I see, and one of the key things of my book is that when people look from the United States, they tend to use their approach to other countries. And I think that what this and the previous administration is doing on China bashing and Congress on the exchange rate is not going to get us anywhere. Clearly, there are problems with the exchange rate in China. But if you want the Chinese to move, it is not through the media that you are going to put pressure, because they are not going to move anywhere. My approach is, let's have the Chinese consume more. We need to raise the standard of living of the Chinese. Let's foster policies to increase domestic consumption in China. And therefore, as they consume more, they will import more products from the rest of the world. That's, in my view, the way to go.
China holds a lot of America's paper. Who holds most of Argentina's paper?
Mostly Argentinians. Mostly Argentinians and the local social security system.
But they were hurt, weren't they, by the $100 billion default in 2001? Do they trust the economy anymore?
Well, actually, at that time, more than 50% of the debt was in foreign hands. After the restructuring that happened in 2005, slowly credibility became came back. And when you look clearly at the numbers of the Argentinian economy from a debt perspective, there's been a good job being done. You know, I wasn't in favor of the default, but the restructuring, and when you look at the level of debt to the level of production, you see a viable country that can go through the periods of crisis that we had in 2008 and 2009.
My guest is Martin Redrado, who's written a book called No Reserve, The Limit of Absolute Power. It's been translated from the Spanish by Dan Newland, and it is published by Amazon Crossing. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. What, in your opinion, were the political motivations of President Fernandez to pay down the debt?
Well, actually, their motive was to continue to increase spending, not to use the money of the budget, or basically to go out to the credit markets. Basically, my position was interest rates are very low. Let's take advantage of this possibility, but let's become more integrated into the credit markets of the world so as to provide credit to the local economy and to corporations. Unfortunately, the government took a shortcut. They wanted to continue to spend without any limit, and therefore grabbing central bank reserves is great because you don't have control from anybody.
Could they have raised taxes?
Well, I don't think that raising taxes was the right approach. It's basically—
Well, there is a big gap between the rich and the poor in Argentina.
Oh, absolutely. But already what you need is to broaden the tax base. There are many people that don't pay taxes in Argentina, but people that pay taxes already pay pretty high taxes. What you needed to do is to reintegrate into the world credit market, to issue debt in the foreign market, not to increase the level of debt, but to maintain the level of capital amortization that you needed to have. But they just wanted to spend more money, and therefore they didn't want, through the scrutiny of coming to New York and explaining what they were doing with the economy. They preferred just to grab and no questions asked.
When the Financial Times reported your resignation, they wondered why you didn't just stay on and fight.
Well, actually, because the police didn't let me enter on the 21st of January, after 2 weeks of being in office, because a judicial court order said that it was illegal to take me out. When I saw the police that didn't let me enter without a judicial order, I thought, should we do like the French Revolution and take over the Bastille? And I thought it was not worth it. And clearly my goal was that the discussion on reserves should reach Congress. And at that stage, it reached Congress. So the reserves were frozen until the start of the congressional period. So my goal was achieved, and it didn't make sense to make a personal fight and let the institutions continue.
You've said that President Fernandez has been grandstanding on the merits of Argentina's heterodox policies. What are heterodox policies?
Well, it's not basically raising taxes or raising interest rates, basically trying to improve domestic consumption and trying to also grow by our own means doing some government intervention in the economy. Unfortunately, that government intervention is very discretionary. It raises a lot of questions about the credibility of the economy. If you can grab the central bank, then what else could you grab? And therefore, people are very shy in terms of their savings, in terms of long-term investments, because any restriction could apply in 24 hours, and therefore people want to be on the safe side.
And that's made investors wary.
Absolutely. What you have is that very little investment at this point is happening vis-a-vis other countries in South America.
When Argentines are polled on their attitudes toward this country, they're pretty consistently negative. Why is that?
I think that there is a misunderstanding on both sides, that people think that the U.S. is strong because it has squeezed on poorer countries, probably from a colonial point of view. And my view is that Argentina has been quite parochial. Unfortunately, compared to other countries, we haven't sent our people, to our youngster, to study abroad. Our politicians don't speak English. Our businessmen don't speak English. So we have a rather parochial view of the world. And my hope, and I'm working for a generational change that will be much more integrated with world politics and world economy.
Of course, many people have accused Americans of being a bit parochial as well. Why should we even care what's going on in Argentina?
Well, I wouldn't say care about what's going on in Argentina, but you should care about what is going on in the rest of the world. What happens after 2008, in my view, is that the world, still you have a main power, but what the U.S. wants to do, you have to carry out with partners. And so this is a world of shared powers where you need consensus of different regional powers. And therefore, that parochial view where the U.S. was a continent in itself is not a concept that is valid today, because you don't have the strength to carry out your might without the consensus of other countries in different. So we are moving to more a multipolar world rather than a unipolar world where there was one single person or country that showed the path to go.
Well, it used to be the United States versus the Soviet Union, and you had to choose sides.
Absolutely.
Now it's a little more complicated.
Now it's much more diverse. So one of the points of my book is really, this is not a book about Argentina. This is not a book about economics. It is a book about politics in the emerging world. So Americans, in my view, need to understand policymaking more in the emerging world, because you need that consensus to carry your own policies.
And one of your pieces of advice here throughout this book is that mixing political power and economics in emerging country is toxic. What about the roles of the IMF and the World Bank in Argentina and other emerging economies? Do economists in these institutions always fully understand the countries that they are making recommendations for?
I think there is a difference between the IMF and the World Bank. In my view, the World Bank has focused a lot on Africa, which is very important, but it has, you know, President Zelic is trying to move from that tendency, but at some point I talked to some of my friends at the World Bank. If they were the African Development Bank, they were so focused in Africa. In the case of the IMF, my view is that they saw the world as a single recipe. So they would recommend the same to Indonesia, to Hungary, or to Argentina, without taking into consideration the idiosyncrasy. My view is that the new managing director has tried to change that. It takes a lot of time, but Mr. Strauss-Kahn is going in that direction. Well, it will take time and also resources to see that change being in place.
Is there a feeling that their recommendations often come from up high? They're not all very democratic?
Well, more than people see the world as one single place.
Based on one model, which is, I guess, ideally the United States model.
Probably trying to sort of export that model, and without taking into consideration the history, as I say, the idiosyncrasy, the crisis that other countries have had. So the recipes, there are principles that go worldwide. Now, the policies and the recipes should be local. I recall when I studied here in the U.S. and worked here in the 80s, there was a Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, that said, all politics are local. Well, clearly, when you do economic policy worldwide, you need to look at the local characteristics of the place in order to make any recommendation.
The Peronistas kind of bought off the poor. Well, President Fernandez has recently tried to promote cheap mortgages for new home buyers, which would be subsidized by the government. Is that the same sort of thing? And would that be risky?
That has not worked. She tried with around $300 million, but it was a drop in the ocean. Really, you know, in order to have long-term credit, what you need to have is low inflation. Okay, so you can subsidize an amount, but therefore that it will not reach the majority of the population that doesn't have their own home. So really, it is not a permanent and sustainable policy.
When did you start writing this book?
I left office on January 29 of last year when I tendered my final resignation. And I started working on February 15, and I wrote it in 45 very intense nights from actually 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., 3 a.m., where the phones don't ring and when the house is quiet. But I had a lot of things that I wanted to say, and I had a lot of things that were written before, and therefore were 45 intense days, and then published it in Argentina, was a bestseller, and now already 3 weeks ago, it has been published by Amazon, as you said, here in the U.S.
Well, translated by Don Newland, who's lived in Argentina, so
exactly.
I imagine that gave him a little leg up. Just one more thing. What kind of economic model do you think we should be moving towards?
We should be moving to a model that calls for social inclusion. And I think that in any country of the world, how do we fight poverty? And that what you need is basically the best way to distribute income better is better education. It's how we invest in human capital, how we invest in our people so that they can show that by their own will, by their own might, but having the means so that they can move forward and they can move up in that they could have social mobility. So what you need is an economic model that takes into consideration the well-being of the population, and by better education, better training of our teachers, better connection between the world of education and the world of production, you have people that go into the workforce to add quality, to add value, to produce better goods for everybody.
That speech could have been made by an American politician as well. We're debating the same thing here. No Reserve, The Limit of Absolute Power is Martin Redrado's book, published by Amazon Crossing. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.